This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With eight delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product. With amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.
Our next partner has a product I use every day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a simple all-in-one solution as opposed to the ever-changing variety of supplements I have been taking for as long as I can remember. Sometimes up to three ramekins a day full of pills and powders trying to find the right formula for peak performance. Now that I've been taking Athletic Greens for a few months, I love it and I will never go back. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. I take one scoop in the morning on an empty stomach, and an additional one in the evening when I am feeling run down. I've seen such a difference in my own performance that I recently ordered additional AG1 for the rest of my family to use. It costs you less than $3 a day, you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit and supports better sleep quality and recovery in addition to mental clarity and alertness. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/contacts. Again, this is athleticgreens.com/contacts to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein. Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We are joined today by Nick Wilcox, head baseball coach at Stevenson School, recent section champion and NorCal semifinalist. Coach, thanks for being here today. Finally got you on the pod.
Definitely, Justin. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to getting on here.
All right, let's dive in here. Let's go through the resume there, Coach. Take us through your background as a coach. How'd you end up getting into this racket? What was the process like? And take us through that runway.
Absolutely. So background as a coach, once I finished up my playing career, my father was the head coach here at that time. Asked if I had any interest in coming out and helping him, and was definitely looking forward to being out there and being able to pass on a lot of the knowledge and experience that I learned in college and semi-pro baseball. And that was in 2005, was the pitching coach there while my dad was the head varsity coach. I helped him all the way through until about 2013, when he unfortunately lost his battle to cancer. At that point, I talked to Coach Young, who was the athletic director at the time, let him know my desire to take over as the head coach and continue my dad's legacy and just keep building something special here at Stevenson. And So 2014 was my first season as the head coach, and it's been a blessing ever since, just being out there with the boys.
And 9 years later, you're a section champ. So how about them apples? Take us through your playing career, if you don't mind. Give the audience a little grounding of what that background was like, and then we'll get into some of these coaching questions.
Absolutely, yeah. So I played baseball at Pacific Grove High School. Did a lot of travel ball, things like that. Played for the NorCal Angels, which we ended up going to the Junior Olympics. That was the summer of my senior year, which got me a lot of exposure. Ended up getting a scholarship to St. Mary's College. Played there for 3 years, had an injury there while I was playing baseball. Rehab from that, once I finished up, ended up playing at Sonoma State where I got my master's. Played there for the 2 years. Played some independent ball for the Salinas Packers after that. And then unfortunately had another injury that kind of ended my career and got me into coaching.
All right, let's go from there then. So you said you were the pitching coach and your father's assistant from 05 until 2014. So you're 18 years into this, 9 as an assistant, 9 now as a head coach. Let's talk about things that you needed to learn and figure out when you moved over 18 inches into the big kid seat. And we talk about it a lot on the show. You go from being a recommending body to a decision maker. But let's talk more about what are some of the things that you realized right away that you needed to figure out, that your hair was, you don't have hair anymore, but it was blown back in regards to the things that were coming at you.
Biggest thing, honestly, was just instead of just focusing on one aspect where I was just focusing on the pitchers when I was there assisting my father, to now having to do game management of the entire team, overseeing a whole program, not just the varsity pitchers, but you have a varsity program, a JV program, how to allow them to succeed, develop, just continue, how to implement things to continue to build a program. I know that there was times throughout my first few years that we had very limited numbers. How do we go about improving the numbers, which will overall improve the program, get a little bit of success at the JV level and keep having those guys grow and develop into the varsity level? So I think that was the biggest difference. It was just trying to manage all aspects instead of just having focus on one aspect of the game.
On that note, what would you say are some of the lessons you learned and things that you tried early that maybe didn't work or things that did work and how you evolved in regards to where we are now, where the numbers are good, you have consistency of culture, even coming off of COVID, right? We've been able to sustain some of that momentum. But talk about some of the things you tried early that were complete disasters and some of the things that work that you still do to this day.
Always evolving, but it's just such a special place to coach. But we do a wide variety of talent levels. So just making sure that you're focusing on every individual, finding out what motivates each player. You can't motivate every player the same way. So when I first started, myself coming from a successful background, I had the mentality of everyone wants to play high school ball and their dream is to play college baseball. But that's not always the case. And a lot of players just love being out there just for the camaraderie, just for the exercise and just trying to see what they can do in baseball and knowing that's going to be the end of their career. So the biggest thing that I learned is just how to try to motivate a whole team by motivating each player individually. So finding what makes certain players go. And that was something that it took a while to learn because it's not easy to do. And being able to translate and make sure you're explaining certain things of baseball to everyone so they can grasp it.
So in regards to that, figuring out what buttons to push with each kid, figure out what motivates them to be out there. Not everybody's trying to go play in college. Let's dial in a little bit more specifically in regards to, in addition to motivation, what are some of the other things that you've done differently, specifically as it relates to post-COVID? Because a lot of us had to reinvent the wheel and shift. I would love to know what tangible lessons you learned, how you pivoted post-COVID in the way in which you approach coaching, in the way in which you approach teaching, in the way in which you approach leading. I'd love to hear about all of that and how you've evolved specifically over these last 3 years, as that's been post-COVID when the whole world kind of reset.
No, definitely. It's definitely something being an adult and going through what we went through and over those last 3 years of just completely changing your life, not really knowing what to expect. It was difficult for myself. And I can only imagine for 16, 17 year old child to how they're going to react to it. So what I really focused on during COVID was gathering our players weekly on a Zoom meeting, giving them some different motivational things, different mindsets. And I think the biggest thing that came about from that is how I went about coaching once we were able to get everyone back on the field is it's not just about the physical side of the sport. There's so much stuff with the mental side of the sport that a lot of coaches and a lot of people overlook. A lot of things that I learned, or a lot of my friends who've played professional ball, you know, how they go about preparing for their at-bat or their inning or their season, how they react to adversity. A lot of that stuff you don't really learn until you get to that next level in college or professionally. And fortunately enough for me, I was able to learn that and then try to pass that along to the players. And instead of 100% being focused on the physical side of ground balls, fly balls, bullpens, batting practice, able to devote some of that to, okay, things aren't going to go perfect in the season. How are we going to react to that? How are you going to prepare to react to that? And just really trying to get the kids in the right mindset of, I'm not going to hit 1,000 and I'm not going to make every play and I'm not going to strike out every batter, but how am I going to react to that? And even this year during when we were on the stretch run, you would hear some of the boys get together and start talking about things that we went over for the last 2 or 3 years of, okay, coach's mentality is so what, you know, we just made a mistake. So what, how do we bounce back from that? So it was really special to see them really grasp some of those lessons that we went over the last 3 years and really focus those and able to have some success in CCS after having some adversity.
On that note, when you shifted to not disregarding the physical, because obviously that's super important, but layering in the mental aspect of the game. And you mentioned something about reaction, and we talk a lot in sports about what are controllable aspects, right? Attitude, effort, how you respond to things, and teaching them how to focus on those controllables. And so ultimately, what are some of the specific ways in which you have seen your focus on that mental game play out on the field? Can you talk about one or two things where it's like transformationally different than it was, say, in 2005 when you were the pitching coach, in 2014 when you first took over as the head coach, to now, where if you had a time machine and you could go back, you would be able to see the impact of those decisions then as well?
Definitely. Starting back in 2014 when I was the pitching coach with my dad, everything that I was drilling on in the bullpens was mechanics, hitting your spots, things like that. We never really touched on, okay, if something doesn't go your way, how can you clear that and react and not let your emotions overtake your ability or your teammates and bring your teammates down because you're so upset about something that you couldn't control. Just seeing that. And then 2014 was similar, where I was still trying to figure out how to get everyone on the same page and kind of get the program established. And then you look at now, a couple examples were going down 2-0 in the CS championship game. We hadn't faced any adversity for the first two games. We were first to score and we're wire to wire in both of those games. All of a sudden we have our pitcher who his last two outings were perfect games. And all of a sudden he lets up a couple hits, a couple runs. And you see some of the kids were just almost in shock and disbelief that someone's getting hits off of our pitcher, but they all came together and you just heard them all say, okay, so what? Now we got to bounce back. That inning's passed us. How are we going to react? How are we going to respond? And it was so great to hear that, because that's something that's the mentality that I want them to have. And the bottom of the first inning, we ended up putting up 6 runs. So we responded tremendously. And that was just one thing that I saw in that game. And then in the quarterfinal game of NorCal, our pitcher was struggling a little bit. He didn't have his best stuff. Went out there and talked with him, and he was getting so worked up about certain things that he couldn't control. And it was the same message of like, so what? You can't control what just happened. You can learn from it, but you can't change it. So let's wipe that out. Let's focus. Let's do what we do, and let's get back into hit. And then after that, he didn't let up a base run for the rest of the game that he pitched, and we ended up coming back and winning that game. So just seeing that transformation within our program has been a huge success.
Let me follow with this. As you think about this aspect of the whole athlete, right? Here's the technical component. Here's the mental component. You got to train both. Then you got to bring everybody together in a cohesive group. What would you say is the best thing that you all do in the program that were you to stop coaching and go somewhere else, say, that you would take with you, that you could put up in a bow and like hand to somebody else who's looking to get into this or who's shifting from assistant to head coach? What do you think is the best thing that we do in your program that has the largest ripple effect on culture?
I think the biggest thing that I've been pushing from the day I took over is just like you just talked about, controlling what you can control. So that's effort, attitude, accountability. Just that's so important. And that helps win games. Like you go out there, if you're playing, give 100% of what you got that day. And just telling that you may not feel 100% that day, but whatever you have in the tank, give that 100% for the 2 hours that you're out there. And it spreads. If your teammates don't see you giving 100%, then it's easy for them to not give 100%. And all of a sudden, you're looking at a team that may only be giving 50% of what they have. They're not going to be very successful. But when the entire team is buying in, they're all going 100%. It's just special to see just how quickly that spreads and how much like cohesiveness the team, everyone starts moving in the same direction and focusing on one goal.
In the age of sports specialization, and this is my soapbox, so bear with me. Most of our listeners know this. And how what I call the youth sports industrial complex has hijacked sports, sold kids this bill of good that you have to be a specialist, that you have to do this year round or you're not going to be successful. Your team is made up of a bunch of multi-sport athletes. What would you say as a guy who coaches a sport that is predominantly a sport infused by these specialists is the value of having these kids that are essentially seasonal baseball players? And what you've seen, especially over the last 3 years with the classes that have rolled through that have been very heavy multi-sport kids, what would you say is the value of that, that you would promote to others out there who maybe aren't as willing to share athletes as you are?
Yeah, of course, in a perfect world, I'd be able to have a full year with my entire team. What coach wouldn't want that? But, you know, what I've seen is just within our program, you start to get players who play multi-sports. One, I think the biggest thing in baseball is throwing a baseball is the most unnatural motion of any sport. So if you're able to actually give your arm a little bit of a break while you are conditioning and training your body to do other things, I think of football, the kids get a little bit bigger and stronger, which can help carry over into baseball. Then we have a lot of kids that played basketball, which helps with their footwork, helps with certain aspects of that. I think everything all translates. So the more complete of an athlete that you are, I feel the better overall player that you can be. And this year, for example, we had so many versatile players where I have kids who are not just saying, oh, I'm a shortstop only. I have kids who play multiple positions. Luckily this year, I was able to move guys all over the field. And it's a lot of that comes from training their bodies to do other things and not just focus on one aspect of a sport.
What about the mentality of that? What about their mental approach and what you saw bleed over in the last few years, coming from football, coming from basketball, soccer, water polo, whatever it might be, that you were able to harness because you're around watching them play these other sports into your own program and the success that you've had?
Just the mentality, the culture that they build in other sports, they're able to bring that same culture. A lot of our sports have been successful, so they're bringing that success over. I have a really good story. This year, the football team was playing down in Gonzales to win the championship. And me and my wife weren't doing anything, so we hopped in the car, made our trip out to Gonzales. And from the moment we were walking in, every baseball player that was playing football ran over and gave me and my wife a hug, thanked us for coming out to support them. And like, Coach, you're crazy for coming all the way down here. I love seeing you guys compete and succeed. I wasn't doing anything better today, and I want to come out here and root you guys on. But just something that they noticed. They noticed that me as the baseball coach is taking interest in what they're doing in other sports and rooting them on. And I think it does carry over into baseball because they know how much we care about them.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that's the thing that if we could offer anybody listening, the more that you show up and are present in whatever your athletes are doing, the more social capital you're going to have. And that debate of, God, do we want to get in the car and drive an hour to watch this football game? If you zoom back 8 months ago, the answer is, yeah, of course we do. And it paid off in regards to them knowing that you were going to show up when it was the middle of baseball season. And these guys have been fighting together all year. Let me come back to a version of the question about multi-sport athletes. What have you learned watching other teams, be it watching the football team practice, be it watching the basketball team compete, be it watching another baseball team play? What have you watched and learned from other teams that you've been able to directly borrow, let's say, and implement into what you're doing?
It goes back to your original question too, of what I've done different from when I first took over to now, and watching some of the other sports where more station work, JV and varsity and freshmen potentially practicing together to get more reps. So is everyone kind of learning the same technique, the same philosophy from the moment that they set foot into the program? Being able to implement that, I think, has been huge in terms of the development in our JV program, as well as when I do need to bring up a JV player for up to varsity, if there's ever any injuries, whatever it may be. And this year we had a game where I started 5 JV players and 4 varsity players because of some certain trips. We ended up sweeping a doubleheader with that lineup. And it's all goes back to being able to have these players all practice together, develop, learn everything. It wasn't like all of a sudden they were outsiders. It was just a different group of 5 people that were coming to compete.
On that note, what would you say you have shifted this year specifically when you had more adult bodies to work with and manage? What are some of the things you learned this year that you're going to keep doing, and some of the things that you've stopped doing, right? Because that's one of the main things as a coach. It's not, hey, what are you going to do next? What do you need to stop doing to help yourself get better? What are some of those things that you were able to grow in this year based on contributions that maybe you didn't have before that were out there with you, or just things that you evolved on as a coach yourself?
Definitely just trying to combine, if you're doing infield work, not just having it be varsity doing ground balls while the JV did something else, but just having, if we're doing all defensive work, having everyone work together, learning from each other, helping each other, having multiple, I have a great coaching staff that was out there. So having those great options and the great role models for the players, just implementing more kind of like small groups and having one coach working with 4 or 5 guys at certain things, doing rotations. There's always going to be game management for upcoming games for both JV and varsity, but it was really nice to be able to have everyone work together as one cohesive unit.
A couple years ago, I usually ask this, what's a failure that you've had that you've learned from? And I think that I'll let you frame the story.
Here it comes.
I also don't want it to be solely about that incident. And then obviously what I believe were the seeds planted for last year's league title, this year's CCS title, et cetera. But I'd also like you to dig a little deeper after you tell that story to think about maybe some things that weren't quite as major, maybe some interactions with athletes when you were younger that have helped you become who you are today. But let's definitely tell that story. What went into that whole situation, what you were thinking at the time, and how that has fueled the growth over the next, these last 2 years to where you ended up being able to guide the team this year.
Of course, I don't have to talk about this, but yeah, we were up 14-5 with 2 outs in the top of the 7th inning to claim our first ever section title. And it just got to the point where nothing went our way. We all of a sudden went from being locked in to not being able to throw strikes, to not being able to make routine plays. And it was just a domino effect. Every one error led to another mistake. Where pretty soon you're underwater and you can't get up. And all of a sudden we're down 2 runs and competing in that last inning where our kids did fight back. We had bases loaded with the tying run at 3rd base and ended up losing the game 16-15. And I would be lying if I said I slept for a week after that, but I watched that game on numerous times. And as a coach, I just felt, was there something that I missed that I let the kids down? So just trying to watch the game, trying to find something that I could have done differently to get that last out. I would say if that game happened 100 more times, that scenario would not have played out. Like, someone would have popped the ball up somehow, but everything that they hit found a hole. And if they didn't, they somehow got on base. And it was just, it was a crazy game. I'm sure they can make a Netflix documentary about it. But yeah, it was nuts. But I probably watched that game 10 to 15 times and people thought I was crazy. Like, why are you doing that to yourself? And for me, I just wanted to get better as a coach, see if there's something that I missed that I can then transfer over and just never let myself or my team ever have that feeling again.
I feel that the seeds of that heartbreak allowed you to bounce back with a league title the next year, with a section title this year, to run into the NorCal championships this year. What are some of the things that you saw play out as a result of that, where we didn't necessarily fall into that same situation?
I don't know if necessarily that, and just the level of preparedness, our kids just being up 14-5 in the seventh inning, it's easy to take your foot off the gas a little bit. And I don't know if that was like a feeling of relief, but it definitely would allow me to talk about certain lessons throughout the season of the game's not over till the third out's made in that last inning. Let's not let our foot off the gas until we're up that full 10 runs. If you have a chance to end the game early, let's push for it. Let's not even get ourselves in this scenario. Everyone being ready at all times to come into the game and contribute, because you never know when you're going to be called upon, and just be ready to go. And a lot of the kids that were there that came back, it was a feeling that they never wanted to feel again, but I think they learned a lot from it. And I do think it provided a little bit of a fire, but we've also just been able to continue to grow the program exponentially over that time, and the different level, the talent level, the higher numbers. So I think having that consistent success is allowing our program to develop and be perennial contenders in the league and in the playoffs.
Love it. Let's pivot from this and talk about fatherhood. You recently became a father right before the season started. How would you say that experience affected, shifted, changed, enhanced your approach to coaching?
It definitely changed my approach to coaching by having a lot more caffeine at practice. But just being a father, just I've always had that mentality of you treat your players how you'd want someone to treat your own child. And, you know, that's can't be any more true than it is now. If my son were to play baseball and I wasn't his coach, how would I want someone to interact with him, to teach him, to mentor him? When our players go out there, it's almost like a bit of family. You know, you have a team of 15 brothers that you're out there and you're competing, you're going to battle with these guys every day. And a lot of great friendships are formed on sports teams. And just, it was special, even just our trip up to the NorCal semifinals this year and having all the kids together in a hotel and just seeing like how much fun and the interactions that they had. And It was just a special group of kids, and it's definitely like a family feel, which is great.
Yeah, and especially the way in which you run the program, right? Having coached alongside your father, your mother keeps the scorebook, your wife and son are sitting outside the fence, right? So that, I think, trickles down from you in that role and ultimately allows for everybody to feel like they're a part of that. So congratulations on the new addition.
Thank you.
Let's ask a couple more questions. This one I usually ask, and it's a stumper, sometimes it's not, but what is something that you have most recently changed your mind on? And it doesn't have to be baseball related, but growth mindset question, right? You're always trying to get better. You're always trying to explore and challenge your belief system. But what's something where it's, I used to be over here and now I'm over here and here's why?
I would say recently just organization versus controlled chaos. I've been someone who, if you look at, you still look at my desk at work, it'd just be a pile of stuff that I knew where it was. Recently, I have a new director of sales who's very, I want everything to be organized, and it definitely helps being more efficient, just doing, being able to be more successful by having everything organized. I'm still trying to get a little bit better at that, but I definitely feel that the organization side of things leads to more success than the controlled chaos that I was used to.
Yeah, I like that. I'm more of a controlled chaos guy myself. That's probably why we get along. What would you say, and this isn't normally on my slate of questions, but you did bring it up in regards to what you do professionally as a salesperson. How would you say that line of work bleeds into coaching, right? I think it's a very, what's the right word? Very complementary profession, right, for coaching. Can you talk a little bit about how the things you're learning in your job as a salesperson have found their way onto the field and things maybe you would invite other coaches to consider exploring as a way to enhance their ability to network, to lead, to coach their players?
Definitely. On the sales side of things, just building relationships with people. Like, you're in a business where you're building relationships, so being transparent, having great communication. I think those are things that are huge when it comes to leading a team. If, you know, there are numerous times this year that I would have a player who wasn't starting for any particular reason. I just pull him to the side and say, look, there's nothing that you did to practice. You're not starting today because X, Y, and Z. So theory why the lineup is the way it is allows them to not have to sit there and be like, did I do something at practice? No, I want to be as transparent with you as possible as to this is my decision. This is the reason why. Just being super communicative, super transparent, I think has been huge in the sales side for me. And it's something that I've definitely brought for when I first started. It was like, I'm going to make the lineup and the kids will see it and they don't like it. Oh, like, I'm the one who's in charge of making the lineup. Where now it's, you know, letting them know this is why. Now you're not going to lose those players early in the year. If let's say they weren't in the starting lineup in game 5, and then they just sit there and they're frustrated and upset on the bench and they stop working, where if you're able to tell them in game 5, look, the reason why you're not starting today is because I need you to be ready to go in case someone's for pitching. If, you know, he was a little sore or he wasn't dialed in the bullpen and you're first up. So this is why I did what I'm doing. So it's a different level of respect and you don't lose those kids. You have 12, 13 kids that are going to go to battle for you. It's not just your starting 9.
Yeah. And I think what you just said there was important is articulating the why, right? When you were young, I'm going to make the lineup. It is what it is versus I would say, as you get more experienced as a coach, I'm not even going to say older, just the reps and failures that you go through in not communicating those things, there's a preventative tact to working on that in advance, right? The articulation of, hey, man, here's where we're at. Here's why we're doing this. I still believe in you, but this is the situation we're facing. It goes a long way. So I love that answer. Let's wrap up with this, Nick. If you were starting over and had an opportunity with the wisdom that you've gleaned over the last 18 years, which, by the way, is flown by, as you would probably also articulate, what are two or three things that you would go back and do right away that it took you a while to figure out as you plan to tackle the rest of your career, but also maybe leave a few nuggets of wisdom for people just getting into this?
I would say the very first thing is the mental side, because it's not only baseball, but baseball is a game of failure. If you get out, they say you get out 7 out of 10 times, you're a good hitter. So having that mental approach, being able to handle the adversity and walking the players through different ways to handle adversity, different ways to prepare for their at-bats, for their innings. It's not just in baseball. How do they handle failure in baseball leads them to handle failure in life. And it's, things aren't always easy in the real world. So just being able to have other avenues of things that they've learned and life lessons that we're able to provide them now to allow them to succeed on the baseball field, in the classroom, and in their career. So that's one area of just really focusing on that. Two, just being as transparent and communicative as possible, like we just touched on. But I think it does help your program continue to build and the camaraderie continues to grow, where it's very easy for someone to get down and negative energy spreads, I think, faster than positive energy. So if you're able to keep the negative energy out of the dugout, out of the locker room, that positivity spreads and all of a sudden you're winning close games, you're not losing close games.
I lied. I want to have a follow-up question based on your answer. And what I want to know is, can you talk briefly, and we will really wrap after this, about the power and value of network, and specifically in regards to getting prepared for those playoff games, how you interact with all of the coaches in the league and in the area on a day-to-day basis, which gives you social capital in regards to having them pull behind you when you need something? Because again, as you get into this as a young coach, you're not really thinking about that, but as an older coach, right, you're realizing like having this wide network and these relationships with these other coaches is super important to finding success down the road.
For sure. Networking, I've been fortunate enough to play baseball with a lot of players who have played at the professional level. So I'm able to pick their brain if there are certain things that I want to focus on with baseball or practice or mindsets, things like that, in terms of the coaching side of things. It's just so nice. We go to different meetings and I get along with every coach that we go to meetings with. And after our first playoff game, I probably have 15 text messages from just coaches in the area congratulating us, congratulating our kids. I also send the same text messages to all the coaches who were playing in CCS to wish them luck. And just having that positive interaction, positive relationship when you go play against another coach, one, it makes it a lot more fun than I hate that guy over there. It's just a lot more fun to compete against someone that you enjoy being around. And when we ended up going up to play in Chico for the semifinals, I was getting text messages from certain coaches who had used to coach up there, used to play up there, was able to give me some information about certain things up in that area. And it was just really nice. It's something that I didn't have when I first started. I didn't have that net of coaches that were so close. For now, it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And I think it's super important point to finish on is your net worth is your network as a coach, as a salesperson, as a professional, whatever space you are in. And so the more you can develop that, the more you can deposit into those relationship bank accounts, the more chance you have of making a withdrawal later on when you need it. So, Nick, thanks for being here today. Appreciate you. We'll not be seeing you tonight at the banquet, but I'll be there in spirit.
Sounds good. I appreciate you having me on, Justin.
This podcast was also brought to you by teachhoops.com. As coaches, our inboxes get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. Teachhoops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you got to keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down a Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at teachhoops.com and mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.